stupid. He comes across in front of me every single time he overtakes. Where does he want me to go off the track?
No! Stop talking to me in the braking zone.
This week in racing, Formula One gets a big dose of Big Rick energy. Toyota wins a 500-mile race that has nothing to do with Kyle Busch or Martin Truex, and Brian France goes back to the mill. Welcome back to Motorsport 101.
Woo-hoo! Dean Agassi!
You've only got a tonic, mate.
I cannot believe
you are the world champion!
Good day to you, wherever you may be listening to this fine podcast. I am not Andre Harrison, because I'm not in the Czech Republic right now. While our fearless leader Andre Harrison is enjoying some motorcycles in the Czech Republic, the MotoGP, the Czech Grand Prix over there in Brno, it's up to us to hold down the fort. I'm RJ O'Connell, at RJ O'Connell on Twitter. Welcome to episode 155 of Motorsport 101. With no IndyCar, with no F1, we have somehow managed to have a great episode on hand. Because, y'all, Danny Ricciardo has just lit 2018-19 F1 silly season on fire, folks. And here to talk all about it, as someone who is very excited to spend long amounts of time talking about Daniel Ricciardo, is day one Renault fan from New York, Ryan King. Hello, Ryan. Good to see you.
Yeah, it's been great. I've been day one since they've come back, since they've stopped being Lotus.
Yeah, let's just say that we're gonna hear it's. You might as well crank up the Wiz Khalifa. And, hopefully we don't. Well, because it's all black and yellow, black and yellow, black and yellow. Yeah, we'll talk everything about the Danny Ricciardo news, him joining, his leaving Red Bull to join Renault. We also have other news, changes to IMSA for 2019. A big part of the road to Indy success withdrawing with Mazda announcement. We'll talk a little bit about the 500 miles of Fuji at the end of the podcast. And, of course, the bombshell news that is happening today, August 6th, on a Monday. NASCAR CEO Brian France getting arrested for oxycodone possession.
Whew. Well.
Damn.
And also a DUI. But let's not forget. Chase Elliott won at the Glen, so something good happened for NASCAR in New York.
Yes. Man, crazy things happen when NASCAR goes to New York. And somehow this time they have not involved Tony Stewart.
Oh my god.
That one hurt me to say. Also joining us from this
that
podcast
joke was a
from
hit.
From the great state of Texas, Patrick Hofstetter joins us, helping us sub for the absent Andre Harrison.
Yeah, I guess we're technically Team America tonight.
Yeah.
Oh yes, we are an all American podcast.
Yeah,
Australia has been swallowed up in the in just tons and tons of Monster Energy. By the time we get back, this show. Sorry, Rich Energy, you had your chance, but this is now a Monster Energy podcast. That executive order just being texted to me by Andre Harrison. don't look it up. It's true. Uncompensated sponsor, Monster Energy.
I would. Well, as long as you don't, like, as long as they're not sponsoring us like BWT sponsored Force India, I think we're fine. When you owe your sponsor money, guys.
Thank you. Thanks, VJ.
Fucking, thank you, VJ. I am so excited for Daniel Ricciardo to not have to deal with his terrible Red Bull dad, Helmut Marko, and his terrible Red Bull brother, Max Verstappen, anymore.
Speaking of which, coming to us live from this heartland of American motorsport, Noblesville, Indiana, Christopher DeHardy, who is just coming back to us from Road America, which is why he's going to tell us a little bit about IMSA, the races that happened. Some shit went down. We had an upset win, and we have a state of the series and a split of the premier classes. Hello, Chris. Good to have you on once again.
Oh yeah, it's awesome when you get back to the house at 5 o'clock in the morning. Then you wake up 5 hours later to go to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway for some IndyCar testing, and then it's been a heck of a day, heck of a weekend. IMSA, in my opinion, hit a home run, and we have a lot of hot takes for today's podcast. I'm looking forward to this.
The takes will be sizzling. And speaking of sizzling, we got some hot news. On the weekend, on the day that we're recording the show, Motorsport 101's YouTube channel, where you could see highlights of past shows and check in on, you will also have Google Hangouts. That's the thing we're doing. YouTube.com/Motorsport101 has now reached 2,000 subscribers. My dudes, we have made it. Hands up in the air. Let's celebrate. Also, thank you to Connor. Connor, thank you so much for making so many of our awesome highlights over the past year. And thank you to everybody who's subscribed, including, this doesn't seem right, a new subscriber from the Netherlands, Tim Coronel. Damn, I guess we really have made it. I've just got some distressing news. Tim Coronel is now in now he's refollowed the channel. Hooray, we're back at 2,000. This is going to be a pattern, I feel. To get more of our content, please check us out at motorsport101.com. We're on facebook.com/motorsport101, Twitter at motorsport_101. If you wish to follow our personal Twitter accounts, you can follow us at Harrison101HD, at Ryan Eric King, that's with 2 Ks, at RJ O'Connell with 2 N's and 2 L's, at PartyPat116, and at CD Hardy. That's CDEHARDE. And if you really, really like us, if you want to back us financially, you can back us on Patreon at patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 gets you early access not only to Motorsport 101, but also to Bike Live on the Motorsport 101 network. And with Dre coming back in person from the Borg, from his Monster Energy sponsored day trip, the takes are going to be hot. As the second half of the MotoGP season kicks off. You get $5, you get early access to both shows. If you back us with $10, you can listen in as we're recording. So thank you to everybody who has backed us and will continue to back us in the weeks, months, and years to come. All right. Some stuff happened over the week. Let's get into a long and detailed discussion about Big Rick Energy.
Yeah. Huh.
Remember how we had just kind of a general feeling like this silly season wasn't going to be that hot?
Mm-hmm.
Mercedes re-signed both their drivers. Ferrari kind of looked like they were about to do the same. Red Bull looked like they were about to do the same. And then all of a sudden, on the morning of Friday, August the 3rd, we get a column in from racefans.net's Deirdre Rankin and Keith Collentine. Daniel Ricciardo will leave Red Bull after 5 years with the Formula One team and join Renault next year. In a scoop that has stunned the world, Daniel Ricciardo is leaving Red Bull and going to Renault, and folks, it's all now. Silly season has just gotten silly. It's turned sideways. And I think the happiest person about this is our resident Renault stan, Ryan Eric King.
Well, at first when I heard about the news, I was really excited. Then I heard, obviously, you give it a couple minutes to sink in, and then you think about all the implications this means. Like, the immediate implication of, there's now an open seat at Red Bull. Who's going to partner with Max Verstappen next year? Also, the other side of things. Who's going to be the man left out at Renault? Oh, man. It's Carlos Sainz Jr. And then there are so many implications.
Ah, jeez, where do we even start with this? So let's just start with how this directly affects Daniel Ricciardo, who, if he had stayed at Red Bull, would have been coming into Red Bull for his sixth season and coming in with Red Bull switching from Renault Tag Heuer to Honda, taking that massive leap of faith. But now Daniel Ricciardo keeps his relationship with Renault Power, which he's had for pretty much the last 5 years, if not more, going back to his days at Toro Rosso. He has signed a 2-year, $70 million contract to drive for Renault beginning in 2019. Nico Hülkenberg, who is already on a multi-year deal, is going to be his teammate this year. And all of a sudden, it's been known, especially if you watch this season, that there is a considerable gap between Mercedes, Ferrari, Red Bull, and everybody else. But of the everybody else, Renault seems to be the best of what we could call Formula One and a half, the Formula One claiming rights teams, the LMP2 class of Formula One. Well, Renault are a manufacturer team, and with manufacturer money comes manufacturer expectations of winning races, winning championships. Renault has done that before in years past. You only have to go back to the Fernando Alonso years in the mid-2000s, and before that, the Alain Prost years of the early to mid-80s. Safe to say, with Ricciardo and Hülkenberg on the same team in year 4, this is the time where Renault have decided that they're serious about not just being the best of the LMP2 teams, or the best of the rest, and they want to get back to making this a big 4.
I feel like a high profile signing like this for them also, because like everyone knows Nico Hülkenberg, but Nico Hülkenberg is not a Ferrari driver. He's not a McLaren driver.
Is not a Grand Prix winner.
He's not even a Grand Prix podium finisher.
He's a Grand Prix participant.
He does have a 24 hours Le Mans victory.
True.
So do two other drivers on the grid, but that's besides the point.
I feel like this was their proof of concept, and I feel like this is also a firm commitment to Formula One for them as a factory outfit. Because year 1 was pure rebuilding. 2016 was pretty much probably just settling debts and trying to build a technical
Settling debts from the Lotus era.
Yeah.
Which were really, really mounting.
Yes, talking about the Enstone outfit as a whole. Which, by the way, just love being able to just offhandly refer to it as the Enstone team. What sort of inside baseball stuff is that? But I feel like this. I feel like they finally feel like they're in the position where they can spend the money on a driver. Granted, this is still...
Boy, are they? $35 million a year over 2 years. That is an obscene amount of money. You get your money, Daniel. We are proud of you for that.
He's still earning less than... He's probably earning about... this actually raises an excellent question now. Do we know how much Bottas's deal is a year?
No, we don't.
I don't have the...
Is he making more than Valtteri at Mercedes?
Less than Hamilton.
certainly. Certainly less than Hamilton. I think
you take every
Hamilton,
other
Vettel.
You take every other F1 driver.
Moneymakers.
Oh yeah, Alonso makes a ton. Alonso probably makes too much. For results, that is.
At least results in Formula One.
Yeah.
What are Renault getting with the $35 million a year that they are getting for Daniel Ricciardo? They're getting 141 Grand Prix starts, 7 Formula One victories, of which 6 of them have come from outside the, I want to say that's the top 3?
Top 4.
The top 4, yes. So 6 of those wins, we know that he can come back to the field. 29 podiums, 2 pole positions, 13 fastest laps. He has won the Grand Prix at Spa and at Monaco earlier this year. He already has 2 wins. He has finished top 5 in the Formula One World Championship 3 of the last 4 seasons, including best finishes of 3rd in 2014 and 2016.
So they are getting a very top quality driver, and not just a top quality driver in terms of his in terms of its results for a Rebel team that is they've had their ups and downs, shall we say, over the past few years.
Yeah,
safe to say.
But even though those
not championship weight,
yeah, even though those ups and downs have been tied to the team that he's going to, Renault, who supplied Red Bull their power units.
And I think it was becoming very, very obvious that that relationship, yeah, that divorce is already done, especially with Ricardo having two mechanical retirements just in his last four races alone. Lord knows how many points he would have if, you know, the Red Bull chassis, the RB14, and its Tag Heuer, in air quotes, power unit were, you know, somewhat compatible.
So this also, another thing that Daniel Ricciardo brings to the table that I argue that Carlos Sainz and Nico Hülkenberg, and this is not to their discredit, they don't bring the same level of fan and enthusiasm that someone like Daniel Ricciardo brings to the sport every weekend.
Oh, goodness.
In that regard,
yes.
I think Daniel's a shoe-in.
Yeah. Like,
oh, God,
long-time listeners of the show know how I feel about Daniel Ricciardo's fan base.
Absolutely. King as a day one Ricciardo at Renault fan has been there through all the good times when the contract was first signed. And all the bad times, and we were speculating about whether or not this would be a good deal or a move he would later regret. The thing is, though, like, as silly and as irrational, like, Daniel Ricciardo hype does get a little bit over the top, but he does bring, like, a fair bit of personality. I'm saying that sometimes the Daniel Ricciardo fan mania gets a little bit over the top.
Yeah.
As an Alonso and McLaren fan, I have no idea what you're talking about expectations getting too high.
He's saying that Daniel can be a heel.
Yeah, but like the best kind of heel. He's the Kenny Omega of F1.
That's perfect.
Don't at me. That's actually a perfect.
Yeah.
That's really good, actually. Yeah.
That's wonderful. I love it. Man.
Huh.
So Renault in return, they get easily Formula One's most affable, lovable for most regards, personality in the sport. They get a determined driver who is very workmanlike in the way that he approaches things and very, very quick. Ricciardo in return gets the opportunity to be undisputed number one at the team because he was not gonna get that at Red Bull.
No.
Because when Max Verstappen is on it, sometimes Max Verstappen can make Daniel Ricciardo look a little bit pedestrian. And even when Max Verstappen is not on it, you kind of feel like this is still Max Verstappen's team going forward, for better or for worse.
Yeah, and on the Verstappen side of things, there are already reports saying that a possible Sainz move to Red Bull might not be possible because of their terrible relationship for, you know, the most widely reported reason. And the other reason, which I've only seen reports of in most notably Marca, the main sports newspaper in Spain, saying that Max Verstappen has a veto clause in his contract, saying that he has a right to veto any possible teammates.
Oh, goodness. Yeah. Red Bull have given all the keys to the mansion to Max Verstappen. That is free real estate. He's got to bring furniture. The trouble is that he may have a hard time picking out the furniture in this house. So this is also where we get to the fact that Carlos Sainz Jr. seems like the most obvious replacement. After all, he is still a Red Bull affiliated Formula One driver. He is on loan as of this season from Red Bull to Renault. Red Bull still ultimately cut his check. So you figure in terms of his position with the team and in terms of his performance, I know he's had struggles at Renault at times this year, but when he was with Toro Rosso
He was genuinely one of the most underrated young drivers, especially when he was with Verstappen and when he was able to give Verstappen more than a fair run for his money at times in 2015 and at the start of 2016.
Well,
but because they don't get along so well, he may not get the seat. And now Carlos Sainz Jr. may have to look for other options.
Yeah. Can we also talk about I want to get back before we end this topic about talking about what Red Bull loses in all this. But also, like, you just have to look at how talented Carlos Sainz is. In COTA last year, that was his first race with the Renault. That was his first time sitting and stepping into and driving that Renault. And he scored points and was genuinely as fast or faster than Nico Hülkenberg all weekend, who had been driving that car all year
all
long.
All season long.
Yeah.
And to be fair, it's not like Carlos Sainz Jr. is just no match at all for Nico Hülkenberg. Yes, the point share is 52-30 in favor to Hülkenberg, who was 7th in the championship, to Carlos Sainz is 11th. But Carlos Sainz hasn't always had the luck on his side, and he's had some genuinely impressive races, including 5th place at Azerbaijan earlier in the season, which is still Renault's joint best result of the season, followed only by Hülkenberg's 5th at the German Grand Prix. Mm-hmm. Carlos Sainz mania has cooled down, has chilled just a little bit, but it's still hot. And the thing is, he definitely deserves it. On merit, he should definitely get the Red Bull drive, but the politics may not let him have it.
Yeah.
And that's really a shame if that turns out to be the case.
Red Bull's really losing something in all this. They are losing their more consistent, and I would say equally as talented head. Max will pull out drives that make you reconsider what are possible in certain conditions. But in terms of average pace, I'd say they're about the same. They each have days where they're better than the other. Daniel is far better on the brakes than Max is, and far better at making judgment calls than Max is. So the weekends where Max will get a bit hot, like we saw for the first half of this year, and make some sort of altering... Now they're going to be scoring. They don't have the Ricciardo points to bank on. They don't have – they're losing their – even if Sainz comes in and replaces Ricciardo, I don't rate Sainz as high as Ricciardo. They're losing their most talented driver lineup they've had.
Yeah.
Well, the second most talented driver lineup they had, the first one, which was 2014.
Vettel and Webber.
Yeah.
Nope.
Oh, Vettel and Ricciardo.
Yeah, Vettel and Ricciardo.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I think of Vettel and Webber as the team that won all the titles.
Yeah, but one person was doing all the winning there, bud.
Man, you don't have to. You know that cuts deep.
So
if not Carlos Sainz, who would get that second Red Bull seat?
Didn't you hear it's Fernando Alonso?
Yeah, like in my mind as a team principal, if I have to run Max Verstappen as a second to Verstappen, like if I'm being held at gunpoint to run Max Verstappen, but yeah, if I have to run Max Verstappen, ideally,
Christian Horner sympathizes.
Ideally, in that second seat, I'd want a reliable, crafty veteran who, number one, can reliably score points, and number two, who could probably tame Max Verstappen. And when people say Fernando Alonso, I'm like, maybe it should be Fernando Alonso. And then there are also like this like wild rumors out of left field saying that Red Bull are trying to entice John Eric Verne to come back, which like that is not going to happen.
Yeah, I'm sorry. That's Formula E champion should be Formula E world champion, but semantics. John Eric Verne. He's not coming back.
He's not coming back.
Unless he personally gets to hit Helmut Marko very hard.
You know, if Kimi doesn't get another one-year deal at Ferrari, you know, Red Bull wouldn't be a bad fit. I know Kimi and Mats have had their spats in the past, but the thing is, it almost seems like he's a perfect fit. Kimi's got that veteran experience. He can score points. And he's not going to threaten Mats' place within the team too much, for better or for worse. No, it does seem like the obvious pick to replace Daniel Ricciardo, if it's not Sainz, and if it's not Fernando Alonso, well, it's gonna be Pierre Gasly from Scuderia Toro Rosso, has 3 points finishes, but all pretty big ones: 4th in Bahrain, 6th in Hungary, doing pretty good things with a Scuderia Toro Rosso Honda, which, by the way, he has that experience with the Honda power unit already. Has a good relationship with Honda going back to his one-off with Team Mugen and Super Formula. And is every bit the top prospect driver that Red Bull likes. Formula Renault Euro Cup champion 2013. Runner-up in the Formula Renault 3.5 Series 2014. 2016 GP2, now Formula 2 champion. Super Formula runner-up in 2017. Pierre is good. He just, his equipment just consistently won't let him show that.
It's okay, but then I agree that Gasly is probably the most likely prospect at this exact moment, because we all know Kimi is going back to McLaren. Kimi's going home. Or alternatively, Carlos is also going to McLaren, depending on who you ask. But then the question is, okay, who does Toro Rosso put in their second seat?
Yeah, because that causes
the amount of
strange issue where, if you look ahead to Toro Rosso in 2019 as a whole for them, where technically in 2019 they'll be remaining the on paper works Honda team while Red Bull is a customer, which seems strange. But then there are also other rumors from like last year that Honda were kind of aiming to buy out Toro Rosso.
Yeah, and if Brendan Hartley, you know, who deserves a lot better, if he's kind of a one-and-done deal, which wouldn't make sense, and if Pierre Gasly is the man moving up, well, now Red Bull have cleared the decks for their junior team and don't necessarily have a Formula One-ready prospect to take their place, which has led credence to the rumors that Red Bull may take Lando Norris out on loan from McLaren. But now that may come in a little bit of jeopardy, considering that McLaren and Toro Rosso are at a bit of odds with one another over the whole James Key thing.
And that Lando himself has said he's willing to wait to step up to F1.
Yeah,
it looks like Lando's coming up with McLaren. They don't think you're Red Bull season. So if you're Red Bull, what do you do with this Toro Rosso lineup? Do you try and bring somebody back into the fold, like an Alexander Albon, or you take another, your Brendan Hartley, or do you try and convince, or do you just hope and pray that Dan Ticktum can get those requisite super license points, and then you know, try and write a really convincing letter that, hey, Dan's ready for F1.
Artem Markelov.
No.
Chris has the right answer. Chris has the right answer.
Mamma mia, that's a spicy suggestion that, like, I am entirely here for.
Like, I would say
it would be an even swap.
The only hitch in that scenario is, I assume Markelov would be willing to leave. It's more likely, will Renault let him leave?
Yeah, because he'll be rushing to get there. Renault, yeah, he would be rushing. Shit. Also, I would love Artem Markelov, but I feel like people would just sour and just like, oh, Williams brought in Sergei Sorotkin. Now imagine they're bringing up another Russian in Formula 2, which I've never heard of. So, man,
I think we know the answer to.
It's Alonso, isn't it?
No, it's the other one.
The other one.
They're going to trade Van Dorn for Key. That is where I've come down on my thinking over the past couple days, and after I've seen my one or two paddock contacts that I still talk to think that they're McLaren and Toro Rosso are close to agreeing on a deal, but it's going to involve trade of personnel, and with Stoffel's seat looking like a question mark in general with all this Carlos Sainz talk, I don't know. I wonder if they give him Sainz. I wonder if Sainz even still wears a Red Bull helmet in that McLaren.
I don't. Oh, goodness. Yeah. I'm thinking this will be the end of. Oh, okay. Go on.
This is going to sound wild. This is going to sound wild.
Give me your spiciest take.
James Key for Fernando Alonso. Wait. Yeah, James Key for Fernando Alonso.
Okay. James Key is not the Fernando Alonso of technical teams, though. That would be, hey, no, for your Red Bull seat, we give you Alonso. You give us Newey. Newey's coming home.
Yeah. there were rumors that that Adrian Newey would be going with Daniel Ricciardo to this new look Red Bull team, and I gotta say, if they had done that, oh buddy,
you mean this new look Renault team?
Yeah, the new look Renault.
Team. Okay,
the new look Renault team. I am one glass of rum and coke into this recording. We've already gone a good half hour.
Oh, have we
talking
really?
Everything? Yes, we're already waist deep into Big Rick Energy. That is the subject. Daniel Ricciardo is going to Renault with Nico Hülkenberg in 2019. Max Verstappen has an open seat. Will it be Carlos Sainz Jr.? Will it be Pierre Gasly? Will it be Fernando Alonso or Kimi Räikkönen or somebody else that we don't know of? What happens with Toro Rosso? What happens with McLaren?
Though we do have to talk about closed doors, because before they had signed Daniel Ricciardo, there were rumors that the Renault board wanted a French driver in that seat, and the number one target was Esteban Ocon at the
At
Force India. Now that door is closed. Now it seems like Ocon will have to stay at Force India. The future is a bit unclear of still. Though it seems Force India will be around, we just don't know who will be the owner of the team.
Under rich ownership. Hey.
Oofa doofa.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, and Sergio Perez not exactly making things easier with vague Instagram story posts suggesting that he might retire. Or maybe he's just selling off his diecast collection. Or maybe he's just remembering the years 2011 to 2018 when Tumblr was still good.
It was good?
Yeah, Chris actually has the valid point. The Force India saga is still ongoing. Will Sergio Perez stay? Will Esteban Ocon stay? Does Esteban Ocon want to stay? What happens here? What happens with any of this stuff? All we know is that over the next few weeks and months, things are going to get really, really silly and silly season.
Because Spice is going to be so good.
Ainsley Harriet is just dropping all the spices and all the hot sauce right into this dish. Yep.
All we know is that Dan Ricciardo now drives for the inaugural Grand Prix champions, Renault.
Oh my goodness! I am so excited for King to become the internet's number one.
It's gonna happen quicker than I imagine.
Let's do it. Hand and lovable hand, King. Let's do it.
Wait, breaking news here: the Shuri is no longer awful. It's okay. Yeah, it actually gives you bacterial infections, but it's okay.
You have no soul.
Whoa. The alcoholic content in the champagne kills bacteria, RJ.
The rumors suggest otherwise, but now that we're on the subject of alcoholic substances, Monday, August the 6th, 2018.
Where were you?
Where were you? So, to set the scene... NASCAR at one point, particularly in the late 90s and early 2000s, was making a big case to be as good as big as any of North America's big four sports. Certainly bigger than the National Hockey League, which is going through a rough patch. About as big as Major League Baseball, the NFL, the NBA, anything like that. Multi-billion dollar contracts for television deals, sponsorships, one of the deepest classes of drivers we've ever seen, television ratings through the roof, spectator popularity through the roof, and then not coincidentally, around 2003, I would believe that Bill France Jr. Lent the keys to his son Brian Z. France.
Yes,
Brian has made some very curious changes over the past few years, and many for better or for worse reasons, kind of feel like the blame should be put on Brian France for NASCAR's sudden dip in popularity.
It should be noted that Brian France, before 2003, he was one of the leading forces behind the creation of the NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series, which ended up being, at first it was envisioned as like this weird NASCAR senior tour, but it's morphed into like this weird popular like national series for NASCAR.
Yeah, like it's basically NASCAR's equivalent of Moto3 for the bike fan. It's every bit as fun sometimes. But out of all this, you know, Brian France has made some strange decisions, some groundbreaking decisions, some very questionable decisions.
And now we know why.
Brian France has gone back to the mill. In the story from ESPN, NASCAR CEO and chairman Brian France was arrested on charges of aggravated driving while intoxicated and criminal possession of a controlled substance, according to a Sag Harbor Bridge, New York Police Department news release. That's right. Brian France got pulled over in the Hamptons. King, what happens when you drive in the Hamptons?
Well, when you drive in the Hamptons, there's literally only one highway in or out. And most of these towns are really small towns with, like, two-lane roads. There are very few of these two-lane roads, so it's pretty easy for the police to cover them.
So you're saying you're gonna get pulled over if you drive erratically in the Hamptons?
Yes.
If you allegedly miss a stop sign while fucking stoned out of your goddamn gourd on opiates, yeah, you're gonna get pulled over in the Hamptons.
I've been
allegedly.
You could be pulled over in the Hamptons while riding a bicycle, like.
Yeah. So this happened. Arrested 7:30 p.m. Sunday, just hours after NASCAR Cup Series rising star Chase Elliott won his very first race, one of the most popular victories and one of the most long-awaited victories for a young driver in a long time. Chase Elliott finally gets that first career win, and then just hours later, the CEO of the sport gets pulled over for failing to stop at a stop sign, and then upon search of his person due to a lawful arrest, Mr. France was in possession of oxycodone pills.
Things were going so well. Even before the race, people were joking around because Chase Elliott's Hall of Fame father, Bill, had announced that he was going to do a one-off at Xfinity in the Xfinity Series event at Road America, and people were throwing around jokes that, oh, Bill's going to get another win before Chase gets his first.
That was the wildest shit of the weekend up to that point. A 63-year-old man is going to drive an Xfinity Series race on a road course.
Fucking Connor.
Bill probably also thought he was driving an Xfinity race.
Yeah, Connor Daly, fucking Catherine Legg, and Bill Elliott to headline your show at Road America. It looked like, man, everything was going so well.
Yes. So NASCAR already released a statement saying they're aware of an incident that occurred last night. We're in the process of gathering information. We'll take this as a serious matter and we'll issue a statement after we have all the facts. 5 p.m., Jim France was announced as the interim chairman and chief executive officer of NASCAR. Jim France founded what was the Grand Am Road Racing Series in 1999. Which then became what we now know as IMSA today under the unified banner.
Which he's still president of.
He was one of the... Yes. So Jim France has... So as much as we give the France family flack, at least someone in the family is, you know, driving positive growth for a series in North America under that same ownership umbrella.
They're about to split Cup and Xfinity. But also run them on the same track. Also, every race is 12 hours now. Enjoy.
Oh, wonderful. Actually, I hated King's idea from another chat we were having. Like, oh, yeah, so now we're going to have NASCAR under TCR rules under Rich Energy's ownership. It's awful. I hate it. Chris, you were very privy to this news, and we've had our fun. You know, what is this news of Brian France's arrest mean for NASCAR in the short term and the long term?
Well, first of all, it's meaning a lot of, you know, bad puns and bad lukewarm takes from people on social media, but this is humongous news. It's reached across the globe. Apparently the Guardian even picked it up in the UK. Really, this is probably not as big as you're going to get unless the commissioner of baseball decides to screw something up and they get him on camera doing it. Really, this this could mean a world of change for NASCAR, depending on what, if how long Brian Farron stays away from the sport, or if it becomes permanent. I think Jim France is doing an all right job over at IMSA, but I think if he can breathe some new life in a cup, it might change a few things, because some things definitely need changing now, and quite frankly, Brian France wasn't doing the right job. I will say this, though. The person I feel bad for most that's not in the France family is Chase Elliott, because if you look at, you know, all the good things that he was trying to go for, and, you know, get away from all the stigma of not having won a race and all the bad memes about hating it for his guys, well, you know, now all of a sudden he doesn't have to deal with that, but now the headlines are on, you know, some jackass.
All on the owner of the sport.
Some jackass that couldn't call an Uber.
Jeez.
Well,
yeah.
Ubers are expensive out there in the half of the sun.
I'm sure he's got a black Amex. He can finance it.
I also want to point out that yes, Brian France does need help, and it's you know, I definitely hope that he gets it. But also, you know, he's a multimillionaire CEO. He's not necessarily a friend. So if you're out there saying like, man, we need to have a little bit of humanity for Brian France, when you probably won't even stick up for your own friends or family members who you actually know, rather than just some dude who you know as a public figure that's not related to you, isn't your friend, probably won't be your friend.
You know, yeah.
Maybe straighten your priorities out a little bit. I'm not saying that it's great that Brian France got pulled over because it got caught with a controlled substance. Because it is kind of bad, but also, you know, he's not your friend.
Yeah, he's not your friend.
You don't need to stick up for him that. You don't need to stick up for him that much.
Bill France don't care about you.
Yeah, the fact that he decided to get behind the wheel while intoxicated, he didn't care about a lot of people.
Yeah, Bill is also dead. I meant Brian, but Brian France won't help you get clean.
And that's the thing about Bill that's the thing about Bill Senior, Bill Junior. They were concerned about image to a staggering fault. Not so much Brian after this.
I don't know. I feel like he only got away with it the last time because it was pre-Twitter. I mean, we have the NASCAR subreddit literally busting teams that are cheating in Cup. Like, things have gotten way different.
Reddit R NASCAR is not only turning young journeyman drivers into top stars, but also probably doing a better job at a technical inspection than their own paid technical department.
Like, they're the stewards we need.
Yeah, if I ever ran Formula One, I would hire specifically the NASCAR subreddit to be my scrutineering department.
Thank God, don't hire the F1 subreddit to do a damn thing.
Oh, goodness. Out of all that, the races will still carry on. There will be new leadership. And, you know, NASCAR still has a lot of other problems that it has to kind of work its way through and around.
And if I may, the other people that we should also feel bad for are all the PR people in NASCAR that are trying to figure out a way to get out a different message than what everybody else is talking about, because this is clearly not the thing they wanted to look forward to seeing on Monday morning as well.
Yeah, we should be talking about all of these first-time winners and how, like, Jimmy Johnson's not winning, which is weird.
That's strange.
Honestly,
Jimmy Johnson is now the veteran underdog.
Yeah. This was Chevrolet's second win this year and Hendrick's first win in 37 races, and we're talking about the CEO of NASCAR getting arrested. Like, at some point, you'd have to ask yourself, you know, why? What's going on here? Come on.
It kind of shows that no one cares about. People are so focused on the story of why the product is not maybe where it needs to be that people aren't focusing on the product.
Yeah. Yeah, because when NASCAR gets out of its own way and stops trying to gimmick everything up, there is a genuinely good product. Like, Pat, I know you and I are going to diverge on this, but I have an appreciation for the skill that oval racing takes. It's different from road and street course racing. And the engineering aspect of NASCAR is sorely underrated for what is seen as a primitive backwoods sport. There's as many great engineering minds working in top NASCAR teams as there are in a lot of Formula One teams.
You're mischaracterizing how I feel about ovals quite a bit. I don't like watching ovals and open wheel cars because I think that it is unacceptable levels of danger in an open cockpit car. I realize that there are safe ways to do it. That is not this discussion. We can get into that another time.
That is entirely
NASCAR sucks because they don't take it seriously. NASCAR sucks because all of these teams that are cheating, when they cheat week after week after week with no sense of remorse, cool, you start taking away wins. You start being serious about what your series is. The stage system, all of these things, those aren't going to fix NASCAR. NASCAR sucks because NASCAR will not take what it needs seriously and will not look at anything other than getting back to the good days of the 2000s.
Yeah, like, it
also,
is...
Also, there are two NASCAR series that are still carbureted. You cannot talk about road relevancy in relation to anything NASCAR-related when you are still carbureting things that are not motorcycles or lawn equipment. End of rant.
But hey, that's Supra, though.
A Supra that will have a carburetor if they race it in Xfinity.
Oh my god, a Supra that looks nothing like a Toyota Supra. It's wonderful. It looks hideous. I love it.
Yeah, it feels like NASCAR takes absolutely the wrong thing seriously. We've talked about this on this show many, many times before, where they take the pretty much golden to fisticuffs seriously, but the rule book might as well not be existent.
It is the Air Bud rule book of race series.
Where it's like, you'll get...
It is the Who's Line rule book of race series.
And it's not like we're saying that, oh, they're cheating week in and week out, and like they're not getting caught or anything. No, they're getting caught. They're getting penalized. And they're choosing to do it again and again and again.
Oh, if they were getting caught, yeah. I wouldn't care.
Yeah.
It's the
because, hey, encumbered victories. We're only gonna take a little bit of points off you. We're gonna actually strip you of wins and winnings, but encumbered victories. You can still win the title.
If they want to be a legitimate sporting body seen up there along the lines of the NFL, well, all right, let's. You know what I mean by legitimate sporting bodies?
There are some things that there are that are cross pollinating that really shouldn't. In either series.
Let's just say. When the NCAA are willing to take wins away and you're not, you need to look in the mirror.
Don't forget, you can take pole positions away after the fans have left, but heaven forbid you do it for a race.
NASCAR needs to. With how IMSA has been run the past 3 years, I would say we might have good things to look forward to, and.
Is this
as we go to the state of IMSA later in the show, IMSA looks very good right now.
Yeah,
that actually might be a perfect segue to get into the state of the series and also some musings on what happened at Road America for their IMSA race weekend. Chris, you were at the races. You saw pretty much everything from the big WeatherTech sports car series to a couple of monster wrecks and some of the support race. Tell us what you saw. Tell us what you came away with.
So first of all, the kink does not discriminate. It goes against. It goes after everybody. There was a wreck there in the Porsche GT3 Cup Challenge race on Saturday. There was a pretty big wreck there on the let me do it like Ryan Eversley. The Continental Tire Sports Car Challenge race on Saturday. With two cars, one of them actually flipping, and there was also a wreck there on Sunday during the IMSA race as well. The Continental Tires Road Race Challenge. I won't do that anymore. Sorry. Funny enough, that wreck actually helped lead to the perfect pit strategy for the GT Daytona class winner. But so let's go back to the beginning of the weekend. On Friday, there was a massive State of the Series address with John Hydaw up there with Scott Atherton, the IMSA president.
Big Scotty.
Yes. And I can tell you right now, I'm really excited about where they're going to head for 2019. Some people disagree with me about some of their big announcements, but let's get right into it. First of all, something that everyone can agree with, they're going to be on NBC and NBCSN and CNBC the entirety of 2019.
Yes! Perfect.
In my opinion, Fox Sports was not a good partner for them. And I think
No.
Well, they weren't really a partner in the first place. But so NBCSN is going to be the sole home for the Daytona 24 Hours next year, and they're going to have, I think, 8 or 9 hours of network TV coverage next year, which is going to be about a good amount more than what they had this year. But anyway, I digress.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So the races that are going to be on the main NBC network are the Canadian, the Mosport race in Canada. They're going to have the WeatherTech race, the race at Laguna Seca in its entirety, and they're going to have at least part of the Petit Le Mans, which I will be back at next year. The schedule in terms of the IMSA Michelin Championship, it's going to look the same. No venues are being added, none are being replaced, none are being dropped. It's pretty much in the same order. The only thing that's pending approval is the Belle Isle Grand Prix in Detroit from the local government. But you got two and some parts of races on NBC. You're going to have Robots 24 all on NBCSN, which, you know, sometimes I go back and forth with this. It's like, it's great that it's on one network, but you also feel like, but should some of your biggest race be on network television?
Well, look at Sebring. It's going to be on NBCSN and CNBC. But the good thing about it all being on NBCSN is that you don't have to switch channels and play channel tag. Like, okay, wait, do we have to go to CNBC? Do we have to go to NBC? Or where do we go?
You have to go to the Universal Network, which 50 people have, a la Fox Sports 2.
Yeah, because a lot of people kind of tend to forget.
BN Sports.
Yeah, a lot of people kind of tend to forget that you lose most of your viewership when you tell them to change channels. If you're like, once Rolex 24 coverage ends on Fox, and you said that coverage will now continue on Fox Sports 1, a lot of people don't change the channel. It's much better for ratings if you're on one channel.
I've been
channel.
Guilty of that, yeah. too. I've been guilty of it, too.
It's 2 a.m. Now everyone switched to UPN.
I don't... I feel like, yeah, that, and I'm surprised there's a TV deal at all, but I am glad they were able to get a TV deal that is more, how we say, a deal?
Motorsports and friendly.
Rather than an agreement.
Yeah. Well,
let's go with the motorsports angle here, because NBCSN is now, in my opinion, you might as well call it the de facto home of motorsports. You have a lot of NASCAR content there. You have IndyCar content is going to be on NBCSN and NBC next year. Mm-hmm. And now you're bringing the WeatherTech Championship there, too. It's all, and you all, and also you're going to have the new Michelin Pilot Challenge. It's the Continental Tire Series is renamed to the Michelin Pilot Challenge for next year. They're going to be on NBCSN a week or two later, but I wanted to keep going with the state of the series. I actually have this PowerPoint presentation saved on my phone here. I wanted to go through it.
Nice.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah. I just took pictures of all of them. So, Michelin is going to sponsor the sports car encore at Sebring in November. There's going to be a 4-hour endurance race with 4 different classes of cars. And it will give teams a chance to test their cars on new Michelin tires for 2019, the 2019 spec tires in November. You're going to have LMP3 cars, GT4 cars, GT3 cars, so GT Daytona, and then TCR cars are going to compete as well. Minimum of 2 drivers, maximum of 3 drivers, no platinum drivers competing.
Yeah, so this is basically a pro-am, a sportsman showcase after the conclusion of the main game IMSA season.
Correct. And the LMP3 cars are based from the ACO, the GT4 cars are based from SRO, the GT3 cars are based from the FIA, and WSC for TCR. A lot of acronyms. I know it's alphabet soup over here.
I like it. It's IMO. It's PDG. That stands for pretty darn great.
Awesome. So we're looking here at Michelin Pilot Challenge. They are going to change from 3 classes to 2. They're getting rid of the ST class, the street tuner class. All the races are going to be broadcast as 2-hour broadcasts on NBCSN about a week or two later. Then we look at the Michelin Pilot Challenge. All the races are 2 hours except for Daytona, which is 4 hours, and Watkins Glen, which is also 4 hours. Michelin is also taking over the Endurance Cup sponsorship. Tequila Patron North American Endurance Cup is now the...
Yeah, Tequila Patron is gone, both from the Endurance Cup and from Extreme Speed Motorsports.
Yes, and so they're going to sponsor the Cup at all four of the same tracks, Daytona Sebring, Watkins Glen, and Road Atlanta. Now let's get into the big news, as F1 Rejects once called it. The prototype category for 2018 will split into two classes for 2019 with the manufactured DPIs and the LMP2 cars, the global LMP2 cars, being into separate classes. Some people in IMSA, the IMSA pack, disagree that this about this being a good thing. I think it's a good thing because, quite frankly, these manufacturers are spending a lot of money on development, and they're being chained back to a global P2 standard that does not change at all. And in my opinion, you're not letting the manufacturers show what they're capable of doing. This will work for all, if two things are criterion are met. The first being, manufacturers have to make their DPI machines available for customers to purchase. That is critical.
That's the thing, because as we're thinking about, like, if the Hyundai JDC Miller Motorsport deal goes through, JDC Miller, one of the teams that has been one of the stalwarts of the global LMP2 subcategory within IMSA's premier division, like, they've generally won races and should have won a lot more, and now they might become a team. But I'm looking at Core Autosport, who have won the last two races with an LMP2 car. Spoiler: Core Autosport won at Road America, and you think they don't have any plans, and nobody's going to field them a car.
Yeah. Well, the other thing with LMP2 cars is that I think IMSA needs to make it easier for LMP2 car teams to get into the championship. I know that there are some WEC teams that have LMP2 cars, and they're just, you know, running around there. And, you know, if they wanted to race in the IMSA series, I think IMSA needs to do whatever they can to try and entice them over to come run. I don't know how they do it with reduced entry fees or tire bill or what. I don't know. But I think there needs to be added incentives for them running over here. But I like the fact that they're splitting them up. I think, quite frankly, trying to balance a part of the class that has open development and a part of the class that does not is not a good idea, in my opinion.
It has always been difficult. I mean, Lord knows we only had to go back to, like, the start of 2017 where Cadillac just showed up out of the box just whooping everybody's ass, and they tried, but, man, they were still really fast as hell. I have feelings on this, because I definitely think it would be awesome to see, like, the Daytona prototypes gain another 3 to 4 seconds. And that is a hot, hot formula. Like, honestly, this should have been the direction that Premier Class Racing and the ACO and the WEC maybe should have gone. There's that argument out there. But the thing is, DPI success is predicated on that manufacturer involvement. And it's hot right now. And so was LMP1 Hybrid once upon a time. Now, obviously, this is much more cost-effective than trying to run a full-on LMP1 Hybrid program. But what would happen if we come to a point where, let's say, Mazda doesn't want to do this anymore, Nissan doesn't want to do this anymore, Hyundai decide they don't want to get involved, and all the OEMs just fade away? Well, then what happens to DPI after the fact? And furthermore, you know, we have had races where teams like Core Autosport have won. Again, it is a tough balancing act trying to balance two very distinct they're trying to make two very distinct prototype classes. But, you know, one of the things that, you know, brings in the attention of Rolex 24 loves, like, United Autosports bring in Fernando Alonso in an LMP2 car, or the Jackie Chan DC Racing Super Team with Rosenquist and Stroll and the like. If those teams don't feel like they're going to have any contention to win because they know they're going to be 4 to 5 seconds slower out the gate, they're probably not going to come in unless IMSA can make a very good pitch to keep them on as full-time entrants. By the way, LMP2 is also going to be a strictly Pro-Am category, so you're not going to have all pro driver lineups in those cars for those LMP1 teams.
So
LMP2 teams, I should say.
It feels like by making LMP2 strictly Pro-Am, you're kind of forcing people, you're making a market for the DPIs where people are gonna have to buy DPIs.
Oh yeah, yeah. And as long as those manufacturers make them available, that's one of the following points of LMP1 Hybrid is that they didn't make any damn customer cars.
Yeah. So I'm of a couple of minds by this. One, if all of the OEMs that were on board or interested were not on board with this change. In the potential reality.
Gonna be now.
Well, no, I was going to say they would have not have signed off for it.
Yeah.
IMSA needs their OEM partners more than they need their privateer partners. And that is the sad reality of running a series like IMSA.
Yeah, that's the WEC is feeling that feeling very, very well.
Also, can we talk about how for the majority of this season until the past two rounds when the core car and for the majority of 2017, they were already two separate classes.
Yeah, pretty much.
And now instead of maybe fighting for an overall prototype podium, maybe, if all of the Cadillacs break or whatever, you get a fight for an overall win still on a off chance, mm-hmm. because let us remember, even though they are separate classes, they still get a chance to the overall, such as the weird Petit a couple years ago when the fucking LM Porsche won overall.
Because all the Continental tires. Sorry, you just didn't build a good wet tire that day.
No.
I'm thinking that race is where it went sideways. I can also think of the 2003 Rolex 24 when all the brand new Daytona prototypes broke.
But yeah, nah, Conti's going to IndyCar, guys. Sorry.
Tire War!
First of all, I'm a favorite of Tire Wars. Anyway, so let's go to the other portion of it. There were changes also in the GT Daytona class. First of all, in practice, bronze and silver drivers will receive extra practice time prior to qualifying.
I like it.
They are the only drivers that are allowed to participate in qualifying, and they must start the race. So if you have a gold or a platinum, they cannot have the extra practice time, they cannot qualify, and they cannot race. And I am a fan of that. Now, GT Daytona also has another change. I know we're talking about NASCAR here, but hang on a sec. Sorry, we're looking at IMSA WeatherTech. A lot of teams are looking at just doing the endurance races. But what about the other events? Well, now we have a Sprint Cup in GT Daytona.
Sprint Cup is back?
Yes, Sprint Cup is back for all seven of the 2-hour, 40-minute races for GT Daytona only. Now, there is one crucial situation here with the schedule. Now, the series is 11 races. There are four races in the Endurance Cup. There's only six races, 7 races in the Sprint Cup. There is one race that is in the Sprint Cup that will not count for overall points because GT Daytona teams were asking for a one-race break for budget reasons. The race at Belle Isle in Detroit will not count for GT Daytona for the overall points championship. However, it will count for the Sprint Cup. So if a team wants to run the entire rest of the year but doesn't run Belle Isle, they won't win the Sprint Cup, but they could win the overall championship.
So sort of a separate subcategory within it's not the GTD championship, but it's like a sub championship.
Correct.
Like the Endurance Cup right now, it's that, except it's the sprint rounds. So it is a championship to go through, like the Patron Cup.
But only for one class.
Except one class, yeah, and that's going to make way cheaper. Class.
Yep, and that's going to make the Northeast Grand Prix at Lime Rock Park and the VIR race in Danville, Virginia, which is almost North Carolina, but we'll let it slide. Those are GT events. Those are GT-only races. Those have been hits. That's gonna raise the stakes a little bit.
Hopefully,
There is one other interesting tidbit from this announcement. This is the 50th anniversary of IMSA, and they are gonna have a lot of promotional things for this year as well. Plus, a logo change to be gold instead of red. But they also released the event class content for all of the races next year. LMP2 cars are going to race at Detroit, which I don't understand because you might have one or two teams go to Europe and that might hurt them in the overall standings.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, they got back in time this last time.
They've
made it work before. They would not have made that change unless they... Well, it's not even a change. It's just you're adding LMP2 as a separate class.
Yeah. You're basically splitting it up. The same cars will be there. Remember, there is no longer a prototype challenge, right. And there is no GT.
Sorry, I just realized I didn't finish my point earlier. now, as an LMP2 team, you're both fighting for an overall win, but also, regardless of how the prototypes do, the DPIs do, you are still getting a win that you can take home to your sponsor or to your amateur backer and go, hey, we won.
Yeah, you got a class win, guys.
You got a class win, which, hey, wins are wins. GT cars have been doing it forever.
Yep.
LMP2 was already a separate class a while ago. So I don't think it's – granted, IMSA can mess it up. If anyone can mess it up, it's American sports car racing.
I don't know. If you had said this back in, you know, the start of 2014 where IMSA could do nothing right, maybe I would believe that. But, you know, give them time. Give the time for the product to settle and to develop into something a lot better than what we got started with immediately after the merger. And I feel confident.
Yeah, I feel
extremely confident that this can work.
Yeah, I think
Pirelli World Challenge is torpedoing their own thing. IMSA's got to get it right.
Yeah, like I
exactly. No,
that's racing the way it ought to be.
I feel like P2 is going to be a good baseline because it really feels like IMSA is going to do with whatever with P2 that the ACO is going to do with P2. So say, you know, yeah, whatever happens with P2 in Europe, that's what's going to happen to P2 in North America, which I think is a good move on IMSA's standpoint, like an IMSA standpoint. They're not going to do anything to deviate from that.
And hey, you know, with WEC LMP2 entries, you know, it's tough to get in there. It's tough to get in the European Le Mans series. There may be something to this. There may be something to it. I had to take a little bit of time to think about it because when the news first came out, it was just like, oh man, this isn't good. And then the more I think about it, it's just really like, no, hold on. There is some merit to this. Yeah, maybe they're right. You know, my opinions are always split.
Though,
just like myself in the bedroom.
This is a slightly tangential story to that, but like the whole IMSA not really being on board with the hypercar idea for, you know, with the WEC because the budget being a bit too high for them, and that news today that both Ford and Ferrari are kind of no longer interested in the idea.
Yeah.
Which I know Toyota are. They want to make the GR Supersport a thing. You know, it's looking likely that McLaren would still be on board, and you know, there's always the chance that somebody else could show up. But you know, honestly, I don't know if I usually take Ferrari's threat of going to sports car seriously, because they kind of just use that as a perennial leverage chip whenever they want more money out of the Constructors' Championship cut. And also, I kind of feel like Ford is just like, yeah, we're not doing cars anymore, unless it's the Mustang.
Yeah, but it feels like without that, you know, the confidence of having Ford and Ferrari in your corner, it might put more pressure on the ACO to lean towards adopting a more DPI approach.
You think Ferrari is holding out for a more DPI?
No.
Ferrari
are not going to be involved.
People.
No, yeah, Ferrari are not going to be involved in anything like hypercar or DPI.
Ferrari's lucky they'll sell you a GT car that they won't run themselves.
It's just that the ACO don't have the confidence, like, there's gonna be these two OEMs in their corner in the hypercar project anymore.
Yeah, they're really banking on Toyota, McLaren, and Aston Martin for the time being.
Yeah.
If you want to just throw out like names, like manufacturers that, you know, that the average layperson will recognize, that's not to discredit Scuderia Glickenhaus or Brabham or the Brabham project.
Oh, I'll discredit the Brabham project.
But that's another tangent for another day. Oh,
we
gosh.
Still haven't gotten to the
interesting
race.
Times.
Yeah, we still haven't gotten to the race.
It was a good one.
Yeah.
It was a good 2 hours and 40 minutes.
It was a good one. I admit, I kind of checked out on it because I was so dead and tired from another race we'll be talking about, another sports car race soon to be discussed on the show. Tell me about it. Is it worth rewatching or re-listening to?
Yes.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, for me, I think the biggest thing is that we could have had two first-time victories for different cars, because with less than 5 minutes to go, the Mazda DPI was leading.
Why? It hurt so bad.
I know. I was hoping to see them get in a victory lane as well. But in GT Le Mans, the number 25 BMW M8 was leading too. Yes, exactly. And that would have been a great post to put up online with seeing a humongous M8 crossing the start-finish line to get the checkered flag. So what was really sad about the 25 car is that they actually ran out of fuel coming, I think it was like two laps to go, and he actually did not make it up the pit road entryway the entire way. He was too slow. They ran out of fuel and they stopped on the pit egg's entrance, and they told him, take your foot off the brake. He let the car roll back down the hill and up to the marshal post so they could stay green the last 2 minutes of the race.
It sounds to me, based on the picture that you've just painted, that they tried to do a Marcus Ambrose in Sonoma 2010. Try and save fuel up the hill.
Well, you know when two bodies each have their own gravitational pull? The big M8 could not escape that incline.
Do you think BMW Ray Hall Letterman Lanigan Racing can fit both those cars in the infield?
No.
Yeah, I think so. It would be a tight fit. Now, one other thing we should also talk about, GTLM, the championship leader, had a suspension failure in braking to turn one. The number 66 Ford GT had to go behind the wall, get some repairs, and finish seventh. And they dropped from first to third in the standings, while the team car, the 67 car, ended up winning GTLM, while Colin Braun and John Bennett won overall in Core Autos. In the Core Autosport number 54 Orica LMP2 car, and in GT Daytona, Wright Motorsports got their first win of the year.
Yes! Yeah. Which means Christina Nielsen got her first win of the season.
Yes, and so here's what's really, really cool about them getting that win here. At Lime Rock, they were actually, I think, in second place with about 30 minutes to go in the race. Their left rear tire that they put on the final pit stop had a construction issue with it, and unfortunately, they did not have... they didn't know what was going on. They fell all the way to being the last place car on the track. So for them to rebound here at Road America was fantastic for them as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they've had some poor luck in some recent races, as I understand it. But it sounds like this race got really silly, really, really quickly in the last couple minutes. I'll definitely need to go ahead and. Definitely give this race a rewatch on the official IMSA YouTube channel. That is an uncompensated plug. And also on IMSA Radio's podcast highlights. Also an uncompensated plug.
And also, if I may say so myself, I am of the firm opinion that if we can change the IMSA schedule right now, Road America is an iconic track. Let's make this a 6-hour race. Please.
Yes.
Damn right. We need more.
Yeah, the Endurance Cup definitely needs another race.
Oh yeah,
make it this
yes,
one.
Please.
Road America never, never, ever disappoints.
Also,
please do not bring F1 there.
I do think you should. You shouldn't go back and watch the entire Continental race, but you should watch that wreck because that Aston Martin fucking explodes.
Oh, Jesus!
Oh jeez!
It fucking
tumbled.
It blew up.
So they're all okay after that, right?
Oh, yeah, everyone's cool. Everyone's fine. Yeah. I mean, that Aston's toast, but, you know, Aston Martins aren't people.
Oh, and by the way, we should make sure that everyone knows that the driver was okay.
Yes.
Both drivers.
No, that's where we... Yeah.
Oh, yes. Back to... We're staying in America. We've been staying in America a lot here, you know, with our Brian France story and what we talked about with IMSA. Part of IndyCar's success is its homegrown talent, and a lot of it has come through the Mazda Road to Indy, which Chris covers, the Indy Lights series down to Pro Mazda, down to the U.S. Formula 2000 series. Part of that success has been the support of Mazda, a car manufacturer, a relevant car manufacturer, a successful car manufacturer, one that is involved in the grassroots level of motorsport. On the last day of July, we got news that Mazda was withdrawing their support of all three rungs of the Road to Indy. That is That's pretty big and a little bit worrisome.
Yeah, there's a bit worrisome when you consider the fact that they've given over $12 million in scholarships to the drivers that are going up through the road to Indy. Not only that, the fact of the matter is that a lot of drivers without that scholarship would not be racing this year. Like Victor Franzoni is one of them, and there's several others through the years, like Spencer Pigot. If he didn't win the Pro Mazda title in 14, he wouldn't have gone to Indy Lights in 15, and without winning the Indy Lights title in 15, he wouldn't have gone to IndyCar in 16. It's definitely not an ideal situation, but I'm very confident that Anderson Promotions will find a new title sponsor for the road to Indy. Hopefully, if another OEM comes in, we can hopefully get Mercedes or McLaren so we can keep all those hashtag MRTI stickers that they give out.
Yeah,
that's the... It's the thing. It's important that we have, and Mazda, and we have, and we do know that, at least from reports from the Indianapolis Star, that Mazda will still give out advancement scholarships for 2019. So it's not going away all entirely, but you know that scholarship money is huge, and it's going to be tough to try and find somebody to replace it, especially when IndyCar is also on the same subject, introducing its own license point system, similar to Formula One. You have to meet a certain criteria to get an IndyCar driver license. Probably refer this to as the Shigeaki Hattori rule, or the Francesco Dracone rule, or the Alfonso Chavez rule, or the Santino Ferrucci rule.
You got my joke before I made it. I also would like to point out that this money kind of isn't disappearing in a way. This money is shifting focus to the Mazda Road to 24. That was one of the parts I picked up in the IMSA press conference that they held. Was that Friday night that the IMSA State of the Series press conference
Friday
was?
Night. Yeah.
Okay.
It's Friday night, like Montel Jordan's hit single.
Listening to that
1995. Thank you.
Listening to that press conference, Mazda is kind of doubling down on both their participation in IMSA, which you saw with the hiring of Yost, and also they want to support more of the grassroots road racing sports car side of things with their MX5 Cup and their Road to 24 program. Which, yeah, it sucks that they're not supporting both, but at the same time, based on where Mazda is the highest profile in the highest class, it kind of makes sense. If they're eventually looking to turn it into more of a driver development program for them, where do they have cars in the highest level? It's IMSA.
IMSA. Yeah. And it's IMSA, and it's with Team Yost.
And it's got the prettiest DPIs on the grid.
It's, yeah. They're going to win a race.
Yeah, they're going to do it soon. But
I hope they do it with, like, a Skyact throwback livery.
Oh.
But circling...
A diesel throwback engine.
But
please, no.
Circling back to the IndyCar license talk... they haven't released the full point system about how they're gonna deli out eligibility, but they've already announced that if you've raced in F1 or the NASCAR Cup Series, you're automatically eligible for a license. You would also be automatically eligible if you finish an Indy Light season in the top three or in the top five at the end of two full seasons. They're also looking at, you know, having eligibility for FIA Formula 2, the NASCAR Xfinity Series, GP3, and Formula 3, Formula E, the other rungs of the pro Road to Mazda
but
ladder.
I would also think that, you know, after the success of Robert Wickens and, you know, them almost having Brendan Hartley, that, you know, WEC's prototype classes and any of the Class 1 championships would also be up for consideration.
Yeah, the WEC is definitely up for consideration. Nothing in the press releases I could find about DTM, though, or Super GT.
Well, DTM's not a real racing series, so...
I'm just thinking of, like, what car is Aston Martin going to use as its silhouette?
The Vantage.
Yeah,
they're not going to use the Rapide.
Yeah,
are you kidding me?
It's going to be the Vantage.
No, you're all wrong. It's the Signal. It's gonna be real quick.
It has nothing to do with what we're talking about. Did you see that Signet at Goodwood?
Yes, I did.
The best car ever made, with an Aston Martin badge on it.
One of the highlights of an all-electric record run from the IDR by Volkswagen, and Bill Goldberg, professional wrestler, spearing a NASCAR truck into the hay bale.
Was that Goldberg?
Yeah, it was Goldberg.
Yes, that was Goldberg.
Goodwood's the best.
Man, it sounded like a good time. I'm
drunk as hell, crashing 250 GTOs. Hell yeah.
Hell yeah. Robo Race gets its first run.
That self-driving Mustang speared into the barrier.
Well, to be fair, I would have done that no matter what.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Layups on layups.
Yeah, that. Yep. That's live rear at.
Though, I do have to run down the list that Racer Magazine pulled together of all the current IndyCar drivers, of all the recent rookies who would not be eligible to be in the series if the current system were in place.
Oh.
So,
yeah, this came up recently.
Yeah, Matthias Leist would not be eligible because he only had one season in the lights with a fourth place finish in the standings. ZCD, Zachary Clayman DeMello, would also not be eligible.
He wouldn't be claiming the license.
Oh, God damn it.
Hey, it's fine. This is revenge after all my Hungary/Budapest puns from last week's episode.
Rene Binder and Jordan King would not be eligible. As it stands with the current information we know about the system, Robert Wickens would not be eligible. And also, prospective driver Santino Ferrucci would also not be eligible. Though, according to IndyCar, there will be a way for exceptions to the rule to be made, even though this is before they've even made it.
I think if you beat Alexander Rossi to a championship in your in your junior level open wheel days, you're good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there will be some exceptions written. I expect that. I don't expect this to be a hard and fast sort of thing like the Formula One super license.
Also, like the super license though, there'll also be a testing version with less stringent requirements, so it's not shutting the door completely.
Mm-hmm. Oh yes. Interesting times. We already have a series champion crowned, and we're going to have two more crowned pretty soon.
I forgot where I saw it, but I think one point about the IndyCar license system really stuck out to me. That someone, I don't know who, but pointed out that IndyCar really must be heading to a good place if they're in a position where they could start turning away drivers.
Oh yeah, that's kind of the thing. Yeah, they're raising the standards a little bit. We're outside the days of the Dr. Jack Millers and the Dennis Vitolos and the John Herbs of the world.
But
I saved the last one for last because we want to save the terrible people for last in that tangent.
Joe Gosek.
That's besides the point.
Bronco Brad Murphy. And you forgot Racing Gardner.
They're a lot.
You refer to him by his Christian name of Slick Racing Gardner. God damn it. His full name is Slick Racing Gardner. His middle name is Racing.
How do you
fuck up with a name like
that? But y'all, how are we going to make our IndyCar debuts when we become rich?
We'll just have to slum it out in Indy Lights for like 2 years.
No, we're all gonna get iRacing.com and buy our own sim rigs and just.
I'll just buy my way into F2.
That sounds like a plan.
Again, I could outscore Joseph Newgarden across a GP3 season. I am on record.
We won't know.
That.
We won't know. GP3 won't exist next year anymore, Pat. It's over.
Yep, and Formula 3 Americas definitely needs the participation. Kyle Kirkwood can only beat what's in front of him. Boy,
oh,
did he.
Damn.
Oh my god, that was so bad to see on race monitor when I was at Road America.
Man, four cars. Props that they did get a top quality driver in the newly crowned USF 2000 champion, but those numbers need to pick up a little bit.
Seriously, how many championships can Kirkwood win at one time? Like, seriously.
Damn, he might want to take a punt at British F3 because the new, it's not the British F3 you once remember from Once Upon a Time, but it's still a British Formula 3 and it's getting all the headlines. Billy Monger won a race and did a leggy on the podium, and now Jamie Chadwick has become the first woman to win a British Formula 3 race. So congratulations to you, Jamie. You are awesome. Keep doing awesome things.
That's my
future Toro Rosso driver, Jamie Chadwick.
My future wife, Jamie Chadwick.
My wife. This show's gone on for a while.
Shall I indulge in my own bullshit?
Yes.
Yeah, let's do it, bud.
Okay, King, tee me up.
Oh, God, what are we teeing up on?
Can I tee you up? No, I've got it.
Yes.
Hey, RJ, why don't you tell me about how Hatsune Miku did this past weekend?
Oh, goodness. Well, we'll get to the Fuji 500 miles, yes. Forget the 500 miles at Daytona, Darlington, or Indianapolis. Fuji is where it's at. That statement's a bit of an exaggeration, but it goes along my branch. Just stick with me for a bit.
The Proclaimer saying about it.
Yes. All right. So we had a 500-mile race at Fuji Speedway, fifth round of the Super GT Series. It's the big endurance race in the middle of the summer. It's the new one to replace what is now the Suzuka 10 Hours. And in a race where it looked like the CalSonic GTR of Daiki Sasaki and Jan Martinborough were probably going to cruise away with it, a broken intercooler pipe with less than 30 laps to go ground them to a halt. They would lose two laps in the garage, and that opened the door for Lexus Toms Racing to take a 1-2 finish, led by the number 36 orange and white AU Toms LC500. Of Kazuki Nakajima, who has a habit of winning these long-distance races, and Yuhi Sekiguchi, who is always on 10 at every time that he drives, and I love him for it. Second in the race was Ryo Hirakawa and Nick Cassidy, the defending series champions, who move up to the points lead by 7 points with their second-place finish. They have not won a race all season, but they do have 3 podiums, and they've been consistent all year, and I kind of feel like a win is coming for Cassidy, who was a former... For Cassidy and Dale Coyne Racing alumnus, Ryo Hirakawa, never forget. Out of a day where it looked like Honda was not going to do well because it was very hot and the NSX GTs don't do well in hot conditions, one of them got in the podium. That would be the number 17 Keihin NSX of Kodai Tsukakoshi and Takashi Kogure, which started 14 after an engine problem, didn't even let them qualify at the car, and then they just picked their way up into third. And Pat, I know you'll be glad to know that Jensen Button and Naoki Yamamoto got a top five finish in the Rayburg NSX, despite Yamamoto locking his brakes and doing a half spin at turn one, and Button picking up a drive-through penalty for overtaking under yellows. So all things considered, everything went all right in GT500. It was a thriller. GT300 was more of a history-making race. That number 55 Autobax Racing Team Aguri BMW, it's not the big M8, but it is a fairly large-size M6, and it is pretty powerful. Shinichi Takagi and Sean Walkinshaw picking up their third consecutive win in a race at Fuji. It's their fourth win at the Fuji Summer Race, which was the 300 kilometers. And for Takagi, he becomes the first GT300 driver to reach 20 career victories, and almost half of them have come just within the last 6 years. That is astonishing. They own this track. And that was with 52 kilograms of ballast. That wasn't easy to do. But they just drove away from the field the
whole
day.
Over 500 miles.
807 kilometers, 177 laps for the GT500 cars. Attendance was good, around 60,000, so we're not doing, like, Fuji 500K kilometer races because it's not, you know, a national week-long holiday, but that's still a very good crowd. Like 60,000 for an endurance sports car race is nothing to
see. Yeah, like the
IMSA would murder for those figures.
Yeah, yeah, like the boys in the booth, specifically our friend Counselor Sam. He said like visually it looked as almost as good as Golden Week.
Yeah. Also, to answer an early question, how did Hatsune Miku do? How did Hatsune Miku do? Well, they finished second. Best result of the season for Nobuteru Taniguchi and Tatsuya Kataoka in the number 0 Miku Mercedes AMG GT3 with the number 31 Toyota Prius, the mid-engined V8-powered Toyota Prius APR GT of Koki Saga and Kohei Arate finishing third. In case we're keeping tracks of this, Koki Saga does a lot of silly costumes in the pre-race driver introduction ceremony. Today he dressed as Toyota's mascot Kumakichi.
Sick.
Wonderful. I love everything about this series. Please watch the highlights, the extended highlights on Jetson Button TV or the whole race on Nismo TV. You will not be disappointed. I think, unless King, we have missed any pressing news.
Well, we kind of skimmed over IndyCar and Anderson Promotions kind of saying what the 5-year future of the lights were going to be now that Mazda will no longer be sponsoring, you know, Indy Lights and the other Road to Mazda programs. And they've kind of, the future of Indy Lights is that they want to continue the scholarship program as well as try to cut costs for the lights down to below $1 million.
They definitely need to continue that scholarship.
Because they're aiming to get a full season entry in Indy Lights into the $850,000 to $900,000 range, while also increasing the scholarship from a $1 million scholarship to a $1.1 million scholarship.
That's just inflation right there.
Yeah, that's kind of just inflation, and winning the scholarship will mean that you'll actually make money running in Indy Lights.
Damn, it's a tough business, and you know, if they get the cost cap down, that'll certainly help the short term problem they've been having, which Chris has discussed many times. I feel like those car counts are coming back up. It's got to come up soon, though.
Hopefully, supposedly Carlin's coming back next year, and there's other teams that are looking at coming back, or rather not coming back, but moving up. But I mean, then again, there's a million and one rumors out there about who's looking at moving up, but. We'll have to see for next year. Quite frankly, the announcements that they made about cost cutting doesn't go far enough. I think that the Indy Lights team budget should be at most $800,000 a year, but that's just me.
Yeah.
They'd have to stop running Indy. Running Indianapolis.
They only had one crash this year, and it was funny enough, it was the one guy that has never raced in a rear-engine car that crashed in practice.
Well, statistically, that one crash was then, what, 75% of the grid? So, like...
Oh, R.I.P. Chris Windham.
But...
No, Chris Windham's still alive. And in fact, he's still winning. Because, shit, he wanted to win.
That was Jason Johnson.
Oh, yes.
By the way, if I may, Jason Johnson Racing... Yes. Was running at the 360 Nationals at the Knoxville Nationals in Knoxville, Iowa, and on the second night out of three, their wing 360 sprint car actually won with, I think it was Carson Monsedo winning. I believe that's correct. So congrats to them for getting that win just less than 2 months after Jason Johnson's fatal incident. So nice job, guys.
Yeah.
Well done.
Yeah.
Excellent. Excellent. They really wanted to win that, and damn it, they did. Pat, any closing remarks on this wonderful mess? Oh my goodness, this show is so American. Dre is going to drop the polonium right in all of our wonderful palettes of Monster Energy that he's
put back. No collusion.
I remember back in the day, long time listeners know this, when we first had Adam Johnson on the show. Johnson being a big NASCAR fan, Dre was getting worried that the show was getting too American.
No,
for
Adam Johnson, challenge me, and I will put up my spot on the show at All In.
Shouldn't it be SummerSlam?
they need it.
No, you're thinking of Summer. You're thinking of SummerFest. That's entirely
different. Okay.
That's also wrestling deep cut.
Well, it's coming to you from the G1 special. I just want to say we've got some good news that I just saw when we started getting on. Yep. Niki Lauda is apparently conscious and breathing on his own again after a lung transplant where he was given 3 to 7 days to live if he did not get those new lungs. Jeez. So, again, the man who's cheated death so many times. And then also, those lungs went through a lot. Those were his original lungs. Yes. Those were the fire lungs. Those lungs put up with a lot. So, rest well, Niki Lauda's lungs.
I saw that scene in Rush. That was deeply uncomfortable viewing. Definitely glad to hear that Niki Lauda is back on the mend. So that is really, really awesome. And I think that is the perfect note on which we can close episode 155 of Motorsport 101. Thank you to everybody who has listened. Thank you to all of our backers on patreon.com/motorsport101. Again, we are on facebook.com/motorsport101, Twitter @motorsport_101. You can watch our YouTube channel, youtube.com/motorsport101, to check out all of our past highlights of most, if not all, of our shows. And thank you to all of our 2,000 subscribers. Thank you all so much. You are all so, so very awesome. Thank you to Chris and to Pat, who helped fill in. Thank you to King, who, as always, keeps holding down the fort. Dre will be back for Bike Live, which will come out later this week. I'm RJ O'Connell. I'm with Ryan Eric King, with Patrick Hofstetter, with Krista Hardy. Thank you so, so much for listening. And we will catch you on the next episode. Later, y'all.
Bye.
Bye.
Black and yellow.
Woo-hoo! Need a good team.
Ready to come and done it, mate.
I can't look for you.
You are the world champion.
Black and yellow, black and yellow,
God.
Black and
guys,
yellow.
Guys,
and
I think
yellow.
I have to make a statement. Mm-hmm. I have to apologize to our fans, our industry, and my family for the impact of my actions during the show. Effective immediately, I'll be taking an indefinite leave of absence from my position in the Michaela Schifrin fan club. I'm so sorry.
Oh, jeez.